Maseches Trumos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Gimel 2-3. The previous Mishnah had said that if one would tithe Tamei food on behalf of Tara food, so then if he does it B'shogeg, inadvertently, not knowing what he was doing at the time, then it's effective. But if it's B'mezid, if he's intentionally, purposely ties taking Tamei on behalf of Untamei food, then the rabbi said, no, we penalize him and we won't let it happen. We force him to take it again to protect the Kohen. On that topic here in Mishnah Gimel, we depart for a moment from the topics of Trumos altogether, and we discuss other areas of halacha where we differentiate between shogeg and mezid, intentional and unintentional violations of various halachas, some derabanan and some doraisa. Now, to understand this Mishnah properly, we have to dig deep for a moment to understand what's going on behind the scenes. Our Mishnah is going according to the Tana Rebbe Meir, as the case with the vast majority of Mishnayos, where there's no attribution, they're a Stam Mishnah, they're just anonymous, there's no particular Tana named as the author of the Mishnah. So then the assumption is that this is a Mishnah that was originally formulated by Rebbe Meir, or his tradition, which was Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. When he codified the Mishnayos, he took Rebbe Meir's version. So this will reflect the Shita of Rebbe Meir. And that being the case, we have to understand what Rebbe Meir holds. So Rebbe Meir holds that when it comes to Doraisa mitzvahs, there is no such thing as penalties for shogeg violations. That is to say, if a person did the wrong thing on accident, he didn't intend to do the wrong thing, so the chips will fall where they may, maybe he has to bring a korban or whatever the things will be, they will be. But there's no additional rabbinic kanas, a penalty against a shogeg, an inadvertent violation of a doraisa. Whereas if a person willfully violates the Torah, he does it in Isser Doraisa B'mezid, violates the Torah purposefully, intentionally. So then there will be penalties so that the sinner doesn't benefit, doesn't prosper. So he, again, Reb Meir holds in Doraisas, there's no penalties for shogegs, there is a penalty for mezid. When it comes to Durabanans, so Reb Meir will hold that many times there's no penalty at all. But when there is a penalty, and the rabbis did say, you know, we're not going to let you get away with this, so we'll penalize you in some way. So then they did not differentiate between intentional and unintentional violations. It's all the same. But the Rebbe Meir is standing up for the and reinforcing the authority of the Rabbanim. And they say, where the Rabbanim say there's a penalty, then there's no difference between an intentional or an unintentional violation. The penalty, where applied, applies across the board. So Rebbe Meir is standing up, if you will, for the authority and reinforcing the authority of the Rabbanim. As we'll see in just a minute, though, there's some exceptions to that rule, and I'll say that right now. Look inside. It says, Hamatbil Kalim b'Shabbos. If a person immerses Kalim in a mikvah on Shabbos. Now, this is not talking about the Tevilas Kalim that you are probably familiar with. That is, when a person acquires a new utensil that came from a non-Jew, manufactured by a non-Jew, and that utensil is made out of one of the various materials, you know, that require immersion in mikveh before first-time use, metal, for example. So we're not talking about that. In fact, according to the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, that it might be permissible l'charchila to do that immersion on Shabbos. He brings a Yesh Ostrom. He says some people say no. It's in Or Chaim Shin Chaf Gimel Sif Zayin, if you want to look it up over there, and there's a Mishnah Berurah, a lot to say. But in any case, we're not talking about that, which might be permissible on Shabbos. What we're talking about here is a kli that is Tameh, and a person wants to immerse in the mikvah to be metahirit, to get rid of the Tumah status. So that is an Issa D'Rabbanan. That is to say, if one does immerse a kli on Shabbos in a mikvah, the kli does become tahor. But the rabbi said not to do it because it resembles tikkun mana, it resembles metaken of repairing a utensil, and repairing a utensil is a violation potentially of the Isra Doraisa of makba patish. So since this is certainly not makba patish, but it looks like it is on some level, the rabbi said don't even do it so people won't come to do makba patish. So in other words, when we're summing up here, we're saying there's a prohibition midrabbanan not to immerse tamei utensils in mikvah on Shabbos. So our Mishnah's case is, what if a person went ahead and did it anyways? Hamatbil kelim b'Shabbos. One did immerse his tamei kli on Shabbos, despite the rabbi saying not to do it. So the Mishnah says, shogeg, if he didn't know it was tamei at the time, or that it was Shabbos at the time, or that it was forbidden to do such a thing at the time, so then yishtamish behem, we will let him use this kli. Certainly, if he has no other kli to use, we'll let him use this kli, because we don't have Shabbos, he messed up. He has no, you know, whatever dishes to eat on or something like that. But mazid, if he knew full well that the kli was tamei and that he shouldn't be immersing it on Shabbos, but he did it anyways, so then, lo yishtamash behem, we now penalize him and we say, you may not use these kelim for Shabbos, to send him back, so now he can't, he won't benefit from having violated the rabbanan injunction not to do tefillas kelim on Shabbos. So that's straightforward. The only problem is, if this mishnah is like Rabbi Meir, and it is like Rabbi Meir, so then I just finished saying in the introduction how, if we're talking about a rabbinic enactment, and this is rabbinic, not to do tefillas kelim on Shabbos, of tamei kelim, we said that Rav Meir doesn't differentiate between shogeg and mezid, and nevertheless over here, we certainly see that he says if it's a shogeg that a person immersed the utensil, and he could use it, whereas mezid he couldn't, so we are differentiating, of course. So the answer is that over here, the rabbis are concerned that if he doesn't have utensils to use on Shabbos, his Shabbos is messed up. We don't want that to happen, unnecessarily. And what was he doing after all? He was attempting to do the right thing. He was trying to eat b'tahara. He was shogeg. He didn't know what he was doing was wrong, and he thought he was doing a great a mitzvah of fixing up his utensils. And that being the case, this is an exception to the rule of Rav Meir. And since he was trying to do the right thing and he acted b'shogeg, we won't penalize him over here in the event where he needs these utensils for Shabbos, because that'll mess up his Shabbos and that's going too far. So there's an exception to the rule because we want to protect his Shabbos and because he was trying to do the right thing doing the tefillah, and his act was just shogeg. So it's an exception. The next line of the Mishnah says, "Hamaaser v'hamavashel b'Shabbos." If a person tithes or a person cooks on Shabbos, so now that's a mouthful, because tithing on Shabbos is an iser d'rabbanan. The rabbis, similar to the previous clause of the Mishnah, the rabbis said that people shouldn't tithe their food on Shabbos because again it appears like you're fixing the food, and that's like again one step away from makom patish. So therefore, the rabbis said not to tithe food on Shabbos; you have to tithe it before Shabbos. On the other hand, cooking on Shabbos, mevashel, that is an isra d'oraisa, of course, is one of the 39 malachas. Bishel is a big no-no, carries with it the penalty of death, even if one does it b'mezid, with Edom and Hasra. And certainly, if he does it b'shogeg, he has to bring a chatas and the sin offering. So, totally different things. And yet the Mishnah conflates them, it lumps them together, and it says, shogeg, if the person did this tithing or cooking inadvertently or not knowing that it was Shabbos or whatever that was forbidden, then yochal, we let him eat the food still. Mezid, on the other hand, if he knew full well what he was doing was wrong, then lo yochal, we say he can't eat it on Shabbos. So here again, let's take them one step at a time. The first one is the rabbinic prohibition against tithing food on Shabbos. So it's very similar to the previous clause. We're saying if it's inadvertent, we don't penalize you. If it's intentional, we do penalize you. And it's the same thing as the previous clause in the Mishnah. Here, this person didn't know what he's doing was wrong. He's trying to do the right thing, doing a mitzvah of tithing food, and he needed the food for Shabbos. So if it's true he needed the food for Shabbos, and it's true that he was trying to do the right thing, and it's true that he didn't know what he's doing was wrong, so then we won't penalize him, despite the usual rule, which is, by Rabbi Meir, that we penalize shogeg and mezid equally. Here, because it has those features of not, we don't ruin his Shabbos, he needs the food, presuming that's true, and he was trying to do the right thing. So this is an exception to the rule, and we will let him eat the food even on Shabbos after tithing it. However, that's what's an exception. Now, let's talk about the Doraisa. The Doraisa now of cooking on Shabbos, that follows good old Reb Meir's general principle, which is, when it comes to Doraisas, Torah violations, we don't have penalties for shogeg, and that's why we said if he cooked it unwittingly, not knowing he was going to cook, or not knowing that it was Shabbos, or not knowing that it was Asar on Shabbos, then yochal, we let him eat the food anyways, because Reb Meir Shita is, there's no penalty on Shabbos applied when one violates Shabbos b'shogeg. On the other hand, if it's a mezid, if he willfully violated Shabbos, so then we certainly do penalize him, and we say lo yochal, he may not eat this food on Shabbos now, he gets no benefit from his Shabbos violation. Now, important to note, There's a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda on these halachas, and many paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, including our hero in this shiur, the Bar Tanura, the Rav, who paskins like the Rambam, and that's how the Mechaber and the Shulchan Aruch paskins. We paskin like Rabbi Yossi, which is not like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi holds sort of the diametric opposite of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi holds that we, when it comes to Doraisas, we do apply a kanas, a penalty. Rabbi Meir said we don't penalize shogeg. Rabbi Meir says yes, we do. And when it comes to Durabanans, we said that Rabbi Meir, sort of to reinforce the authority of the rabbis, he penalizes shogeg and amazes it equally. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, nope, not necessarily. We will let shogeg slide, whereas mazed we will penalize. So the halacha in this case, at least according to the Rambam and the Mechaber, although there are plenty who argue, and like the Gra and others who paskin that the halacha does follow our Mishnah, but the Bar Tanura, who I'm going to follow, because I always follow him here in this shir, says that the halacha goes like Rabbi Yossi, and therefore you have to understand that, and certainly it's the halacha for Sephardim, that's for sure, that we are going to Lamaisa not follow this Mishnah, and we're going to say that if a person cooks on Shabbos, even b'shogeg, it's forbidden to him on Shabbos, till after Shabbos, and if he cooks b'mezid intentionally on Shabbos, then it's usher to him forever, even after Shabbos. He can never eat that food, and others will have to wait till after Shabbos to eat it as well. That's an amazing scenario. And that's the halacha Lamaisa according to the Bar Tanura. Just an important side point here. You may be familiar, even according to Remeir, even we say if he did it b'mezid, he can't eat it on Shabbos. The question is, after Shabbos, how long does he have to wait? So you may well be familiar with the principle of Bechdei Sheya'asu, which is you have to wait the amount of time it would take to do it. So Kedei Sheya'asu would mean if it takes an hour to cook this food, so then if it was cooked on Shabbos, and there's a, we're saying you can't eat it till after Shabbos, so Kedei Sheya'asu would mean you have to wait a full hour after Shabbos before you can eat the food. You can't eat it right away because then you're sort of benefiting, you're saving yourself an hour cooking time if you cook it on Shabbos. So although Rashi understands indeed that this is Bechdei Sheya'asu would apply over here, the overwhelming majority of Rishonim, the Rambam, many others, and the Halacha L'maisa, is that there's no such thing as Kedei Sheya'asu, the amount of time it takes to do it after Shabbos, in the realm of these things. It only applies in the realm of Amir L'Akum. It applies in the area where one has gotten a non-Jew to do Malacha for him on Shabbos. So when one acted inappropriately and had a non-Jew do something for him on Shabbos for his benefit where that was not permitted, so then we penalize him, we say you can't get benefit from that malacha done on Shabbos, you have to wait till after Shabbos, and there the halacha will be, you have to wait not just till after Shabbos, but wait the amount of time it takes to have done what the goy did anyways, and that way you benefit nothing for having get him to do it on Shabbos. So there the rabbis basically said, since people are liable to try to get non-Jews to do work for them on Shabbos, we have a penalty which says you not only can you not under most circumstances, but if he does, you have to wait the amount of time it takes to do it by yourself. That, you know, so you get no benefit in terms of time saving either. But in the context of this halacha and this mishnah, where we're talking about a Jew doing the cooking on Shabbos, there would be no Bechdei Sheya'asu issue according to Rambam and most others. It means the Reb Meir would hold if it's shogeg, eat it on Shabbos. If it's amazing, wait till immediately after Shabbos. And Reb Yehuda would hold, if it's shogeg, you have to wait till after Shabbos. And if it's mazid, then you can, but immediately thereafter you could eat it, no bichdei sheyasu. And if you did it mazid, then it's usher to you forever, you can never eat that food, and other people have to wait till after Shabbos. Okay. Now, the Mishnah continues and says, it says, now, hanotea b'Shabbos, what about planting a tree? So if one plants a tree on Shabbos, that's also an iser d'oraisa, It's a tolda of Zoreya. One of the third nine categories of forbidden labor is Zoreya, sowing seeds, planting seeds in the ground, and Noteya, which the Pashas simply mean, probably means planting a tree, like a sapling in the ground, or replanting a sapling, as the case may be. So that's what it means. So then that's also an Issa Doraisa. It's not the Av of Zoreya, but it's the tolda, a subcategory of Zoreya, of planting a tree, Natiya. And that is just like cooking, it's usur midoraisa. And therefore the halacha is, this is Rabbi Meir speaking, Rabbi Meir holds, since it's doraisa, we don't penalize shogeg, and therefore shogeg, if a person planted this tree not knowing it was Shabbos, or not knowing that was Aser to do on Shabbos, then Yikayem, then he can be Mekayim, he can maintain that tree after Shabbos. No need to uproot it. But Mezid, if he intentionally planted that tree on Shabbos, so then Yaakor, he can't get away with that, will force him to now uproot that tree, so he gets no benefit from the Melacha done on Shabbos. And that's certainly true, even though the tree won't take root till way after Shabbos, but putting it in the ground in the first place is Aser. And that being the case, since he acted b'mezid intentionally, we don't let him get away with it. We penalize, says Rav Meir, we penalize mezid violations of d'oraisas. Finally, uveshvius. What about in the Shemitah year? In the Shemitah year, it's also prohibited to plant. Zriya is certainly an issur d'oraisa. Netia, if it's a replanting of a tree, it's actually a contentious point. Let's assume for simplicity, we're talking about planting trees here, and let's assume for simplicity's sake that planting trees on the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle in Shvius is an Issur D'oraisa also. Keep it simple for now. And that being the case, Ubeshvius, Bein Shogeg B'Mezid Yaakor. If he violates the Torah and plants on Shemitah year, whether he did it Shogeg or Mezid, we force him to uproot it. Now, we're talking about a D'oraisa here, and this is Rabbi Meir speaking, and the principle was Rabbi Meir held that we don't penalize Shogegs, we do penalize Mezids. So we should have expected it to say, like the previous line about Shabbos, if he did it on accident, not knowing it was Shabbos, not knowing it was the Shemitah year, we should let him keep the tree in the ground and only force him to uproot it if it was intentional. However, we don't say that. We say whether inadvertently planted or intentionally planted on Shemitah year, it must be uprooted. The reason why is because, and you'll recall this from Maseches Shvius we just finished, is that the rabbis really threw their weight heavily against what must have been widespread, prevalent Shemitah violation in the time of Chazal. And since it was so common for people to basically cheat the system and lie and do things on Shemitah where they weren't allowed to do, the rabbis made a whole slew of derabbanans that are pretty pretty extreme in their aggressive posture. So the rabbis, if you recall, they pushed back all working of the lands like way into the sixth year where it didn't benefit the trees, etc. You'll recall there's an Isra Svichin. The Torah lets you eat the stuff which grows wild in the seventh year. The rabbi said most of that stuff is forbidden, etc. Again, because people were cheating the system and saying, oh, this wheat grew wild, when really the truth is the person planted the wheat and he's just lying. So similarly over here, since there's a widespread suspicion that Jews will flout the halachas of Shemitah and plant in the Shemitah year, the rabbis were very strict, and they said, even if you claim it's just a shogeg and it was an accident, you didn't know it was Aser or Shvius, whatever the story is, and when you planted these seeds, forget it, we're still penalizing you. And we're saying, even Reb Meir here is saying, even if it was shogeg, when it comes to Shemitah, we are very strict and we will force you to get no benefits, even b'shogeg and certainly b'mezid, and force you therefore to uproot the tree.